Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part two of the pantograph of Friday, May 22, 2020. We are going to begin part two with the reading of some obituaries. The first one is for Ernestine Schmigel. I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. It is spelled S-C-H-M-I-D-G-A-L-L. August 15, 1927 to May 20, 2020. Ernestine Shepherd Schmigel, age 92, of St. Charles, Missouri, formerly of Bloomington, passed away at 5:30 p.m. Wednesday, May 20, 2020, at the Mount Carmel Care Center in St. Charles, Missouri. There will be a drive-by visitation from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday at Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington. Private family graveside service will be at 1:30 p.m. Tuesday at Park Hill Cemetery in Bloomington. The Reverends Mark, Mike, and Barry Shepherd will be officiating. The family suggests memorials be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Please view the obituary and share your condolences and memories at www.calvertmemorial.com. For anyone interested, the funeral will be recorded and may be viewed at www.calvertmemorial.com. Select the obituary tab, select Calvert and Metzler, select Ernestine's name, and click on Tribute Wall. Urita Rita Stonier, August 3, 1930 to May 13, 2020. Urita Meredith Rita Stonier passed away May 13, 2020. She was residing in an assisted living facility in Clarksville, Indiana. There will be no visitation. Her remains will be interred in a private family cemetery. In a private family ceremony at the Minunk Community Cemetery. Gary Park, May 20th, 1942 to May 21st, 2020. Gary Lee Park, age 78, of Lincoln, passed away at 12:15 a.m. Thursday, May 21st, 2020, at Heritage Health in Normal. A private burial service will take place in Green Hill Cemetery, San Jose. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorial donations may be made in Gary's name to the American Cancer Society or a charity of the donor's choice. Arrangements have been entrusted to Frick Calvert Schrader Funeral Home in Lincoln. We're going to return to some local and state news now. The first one, story we're going to read is headlined, Illinois Preps Next Step Reopening Guidelines, Limits Relaxing for Offices, Retail, Salons. Dateline, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker said Thursday his administration is developing guidelines for local governments and businesses to follow as the state prepares to enter the next phase of reopening the economy amid the COVID-19 pandemic. We have guidance documents that are being prepared, work that's already being done to make sure that people have enough time to open safely, Pritzker said, during his daily pandemic briefings in his office at the Capitol. He reiterated that all four regions of the state are on track to enter Phase 3 of the reopening plan on May 29, when offices, barbershops, beauty salons, and most retail businesses will be allowed to reopen under capacity limits and social distancing guidelines. People will also be allowed to gather in groups of 10 or fewer. Pritzker also announced this week that bars and restaurants also will be allowed to reopen for outdoor service, also under capacity limits, social distancing guidelines, and other safety measures. Also, all state parks will reopen, as will indoor and outdoor tennis facilities, and golf courses will allow foursomes on the course with a limit of one person per cart. Still, Pritzker faced a number of questions from news media throughout the state Thursday on issues ranging from youth sports activities to worship services. I'm certainly working with the Illinois Department of Public Health to make sure that summer sports to the extent we can do it with 10 or fewer people, that we want to make that happen, he said. More outdoor activity within the parameters of what epidemiologists are saying, I want. I think it will be difficult to have crowds in a stand watching those games, but I know that there are Little League games and other sports during the summer that perhaps could happen, and the Illinois Department of Public Health is working with folks who run those games to make sure that if you can do it, they're done safely. With regard to worship services and retail businesses, however, Pritzker indicated that he is not backing away from the 10-person limit. We're still in a phase where 10 people or fewer is the desired number. That is what the epidemiologists are recommending and so on, he said. Many small stores, that is a number that is maybe less than they normally have in their store, but it is still a reasonably good number, and they can keep track of people who are coming in and out, and people who can't fit in can certainly social distance as they wait outside to go in. And the next story is headlined, IWU Cuts Four Programs and Reviews Others. This story is Dateline Bloomington. Illinois Wesleyan University is eliminating four programs, but the board is continuing to review other recommendations from a program evaluation task force, including the future of the School of Music and School of Art. The programs to be eliminated are American Culture Studies, Design Technology and Entrepreneurship, Greek and Roman Studies, and International Business. All students currently in those programs will be able to complete them, but one staff member will be lost because of the elimination, President Georgia Nugent said Thursday. 30 students are majoring in DTE, a relatively new program. Nugent said they are likely to shift to a new major in entrepreneurship, said Nugent. One student is majoring in American Culture Studies, while three are in Greek and Roman Studies, and none in international business. The whole object of the process is to try to ensure that we offer what students want and need, Nugent said. Board Chairman Tim Sherlong said IWU remains committed to providing a rich, diverse program on a liberal arts platform. Board members met the past several days online, discussing the task force recommendations and other matters, including the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. After a robust discussion of the recommendation to close and proposal to transform the School of Music, the board determined the complexity of the issue required further data analysis, according to an email sent to the campus late Thursday afternoon. Sherlong will lead an 8-member working group with trustees, faculty, and administrators to take a deeper dive to make sure we captured the right data so we can make the best possible decision, he said. Further action will be taken at a special meeting of the board July 16. The task force, which analyzed financial and other data, made several other recommendations, including creation of a school of business. Sherlong said action on those recommendations might not be completed in July. We're going to get this right, moving appropriately and thoughtfully, he said. The task force recommendation to reimagine the School of Music as a department prompted an outcry from alumni and donors. The number of majors has dropped from 150 to 200 at its peak to 25 to 50 music education majors and about 20 other majors in recent years. If you only look at the majors in the program, you don't get the full picture, said Nugent. Many students who are not music majors participate in chorus, band, or an ensemble, she said, and the board wanted to take a little more time to get a fuller picture. An article Thursday in Inside Higher Ed noted that many private colleges and universities are struggling and could close. Illinois Wesleyan has experienced some declines in enrollment and made about $1 million in budget cuts for this fiscal year. But Sherlong said, we are in good financial position. We are fortunate to have a strong endowment. Nugent said applications are substantially above what we have seen in the last couple of classes. The deadline for prospective students to make enrollment deposits is July 1st. This next story is headlined, Guard State Prep for Illinois River Flooding. It's Dateline Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker has activated nearly 60 Illinois National Guard soldiers and ordered additional steps by the state to prepare for projected flooding along the Illinois River and other streams. The National Weather Service forecasts the Illinois River will reach major flood stage Saturday morning at Mirdosha, about 50 miles west of Springfield, and continue to rise through the middle of next week. Without additional flood protection, water could flow over several levees and flood roads, threatening Mirdosha's 980 residents, Pritzker said. The Illinois Emergency Management Agency has begun sandbagging to help communities along the river, and Pritzker has issued a state disaster proclamation for Grundy, Pike, Scott, and Morgan counties. The declaration will ensure state support to communities that are shoring up local levees. I have directed all agencies in my administration to be doing everything possible to help local communities prepare for and respond to the potential flood risks presented in the current forecast, Pritzker said. And Bloomington Normal has set a holiday waste pickup schedule. Household waste and recycling will be collected as usual Monday in both Bloomington and Normal. In Normal, all other waste collection services for residents with Monday collection will be collected the following week. Routes Tuesday through Friday should run as usual. In Bloomington on Monday, bulk waste and brush will not be collected, and the Citizen Convenience Center will be closed. And in both municipalities, waste should be at the curb by 6 a.m. on collection day. And the Illinois jobless rate hits a record 16.4%. This story is Dateline Springfield. The unemployment rate in Illinois reached a staggering 16.4% in April, the highest rate recorded since the modern system of tracking joblessness began in 1976, the Illinois Department of Employment Security said Thursday. The previous record of 13.9% was set in February 1983, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. The rate in April was 12.2 percentage points higher than March, which was revised downward to 4.2%, reflecting a revised estimate of the number of people in the labor force that month. That news came just a few months after the state set a record low unemployment rate of 3.4% in November, reflecting the speed with which the COVID-19 pandemic brought about a virtual shutdown of most state and national economies. The numbers reflect an overall loss of 762,200 non-farm jobs since March, the largest single-month decline in state history, and a decline of 822,800 jobs since April 2019. The COVID-19 pandemic has had an unprecedented impact on our economy, as has been the case in states across the nation, Deputy Governor Dan Hines said in a statement. As we move to safely reopen much of our economy, we are focused on ensuring working families and small businesses have the resources they need to recover, and we urge the federal government to step up and provide additional relief. The Illinois Department of Employment Security said that because of the high unemployment rate, extended state benefits are now available to those who exhaust their 26 weeks of regular state unemployment and the additional 13 weeks of federal pandemic emergency unemployment compensation, or PEUC. The Illinois Department of Public Health said that since March 1st, it has processed more than 1.2 million claims for regular unemployment. In addition, it has processed 74,515 applications for Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, or PUA, since that program launched May 11th, and another 36,300 67 applications for the PEUC program. Both of these programs are 100% federally funded. During his daily COVID-19 media briefing, however, Governor J.B. Pritzker said even those additional programs might not be enough to help unemployed workers weather the storm. I'll be honest with you. I see the $600 extra that people got and are getting in unemployment benefits, even that added on top of the existing unemployment benefits, doesn't seem to be enough, he said. And when you think about the amount of time that it looks like that the economists, not me, the economists are saying that it might take us to get back to normal, I'm concerned that the typical number of weeks that are allowed may not be enough. Perhaps not surprisingly, the Illinois leisure and hospitality industry was hit hardest by the pandemic, shedding more than 295,000 jobs during the month, or nearly half of the sector's workforce. The trade, transportation, and utilities sector lost just fewer than 100,000 jobs, or about 8% since March, and professional and business services shrank by 93,800 jobs, or 11.3%. And in a national story, this one is headlined, "Whoa, virus rumors spread like virus. New Jersey and other states work to fight misinformation." This is an Associated Press story out of Trenton, New Jersey. New Jersey's top Homeland Security official received nearly nonstop calls in early March from grocery chains, trucking companies, and other logistics firms wanting to know if rumors of an impending national lockdown were true. They weren't, and Jared Maples soon learned the companies were reacting to misinformation stemming from text messages shared widely across the country. Federal officials debunked the message, but Maples said the whole episode was a whoa moment for him and other state officials. Weeks later, New Jersey launched a website aimed at debunking misinformation and rumors about COVID-19. "Misinformation is out there. You can't take everything at face value," said Maples, director of the state's Homeland Security and Preparedness Office. "If you hear a rumor, we want people to realize that there is a place to go to check it out." New Jersey's effort mirrors a rumor control site set up by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and is part of efforts underway in other states to combat conspiracy theories, hoaxes, and bogus treatment claims that have erupted during the pandemic. Washington State, for example, created an online guide to identifying and avoiding coronavirus misinformation. Other states and municipalities have set up hotlines that offer information about symptoms and testing, while also dispelling rumors and false claims. The next time your friend texts you or you see something up on Facebook, you can point them to the truth, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti said last month when his city announced two new websites designed to offer accurate information about the outbreak. The many still unanswered questions about the coronavirus and its origins have fueled a number of misleading and false claims about the outbreak and the government response to it, state leaders and misinformation experts say. "We have a unique moment in time when everyone is thinking about the same thing," said Gordon Pennycook, an assistant professor of behavioral science at the University of Regina in Canada. "It's the sort of thing that breeds falsehoods." At times, President Donald Trump himself has helped circulate false claims about the virus. He suggested untested treatments, musing aloud about the idea of injecting disinfectants, overstated the availability of tests, and contradicted his administration's own experts. The lack of consistent, accurate information from the White House has put further pressure on state leaders to confront what misinformation experts have termed an infodemic surrounding the outbreak. "We need transparency and fact-based communications from our elected officials and from officials across government," Nina Jankowicz, a misinformation expert at the Wilson Center, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank, said at a recent congressional panel on virus misinformation. And moving now to the home section, we're going to read a column by Susan Hazlett. It's titled, With humans home 24/7, pets learn the meaning of stay. And Susan writes, "You've heard a lot about quarantine life from the mistress of our house, but you haven't heard from us, the Hazlitt dogs. It's time that our story is told. There are three of us. The first dog, a Brittany Spaniel, is 14 years old and sleeps most of the day. The huggable orange dog, whose breed is uncertain but rumored to be part Buick, is the only male canine. And then there's me, an 18-month-old, 65-pound purebred hound puppy. As with the humans' lives, our routine has been completely disrupted by the stay-in-place order. I, for one, think life is much better. All day, my people are home. More deliveries coming to the front door means I get to enjoy one of my favorite pastimes, howling at the top of my lungs when the doorbell rings. It's almost as fun as chasing squirrels in the backyard. I provide entertainment to my family. The blonde female gets sad sometimes. It's probably because of the other humans I used to see around here aren't visiting now. I can tell she misses them. So to cheer her up, I lick her face. I love to lick, lick, lick with my extra long tongue. I keep it up until she laughs, but she can get testy quickly if I accidentally stick my tongue up her nose. Another surefire way to make the human smile is chasing my tail. I only catch a glimpse of it once in a while, though. I'm not sure where it hides the rest of the time. The female person seems to be sleeping more, and she snores as loudly as I do. What? You didn't know that hound dogs are very loud snorers? I love everything about sheltering in place except the cleaning. The blonde frequently allies herself with my arch enemy, the vacuum cleaner. As soon as I hear the device roar, I attack it. Before, when she was gone during the day, I could track mud into the house, and the male human would clean it before she got home. No harm, no foul. But now she's here all day, and catches me in the act of eating the sofa or chewing one of her precious shoes, and then I get scolded and hide under the kitchen table. Otherwise, I think this whole staying at home is awesome, and I hope it lasts forever." From the orange dog, "I'm on high alert since this pandemic began. As the male dog of the house, I take my role as guard dog very seriously. I patrol the back perimeter and alert my master and everyone else within a 500-yard radius of suspicious activity. Like all these unfamiliar dogs and their walkers, I've never seen so many. Suddenly, everyone is on our side of the street, and it's my job to bark at them. These days, the house has more interesting smells, particularly home cooking. But that sanitizer stuff stinks, and the female practically bathes in it. Maybe I should invite her to roll in goose poop with me? That would fix her nasty smell. I'm not getting as much sleep as I used to. Can't nap if I'm on watch. And who can sleep with that crazy hound dog howling at the delivery people every few minutes? The retired dog isn't much help when it comes to protecting the family. Sure, she snaps at the puppy to let everyone know that she is still a senior dog, but the responsibility to guard against an unseen enemy rests on my broad, furry shoulders. And while I do get more dog treats, I miss the days when I could just stretch out on the floor in the sun without a worry in the world." The Spaniel says, "Food in bowl? Check. Other dogs leaving me alone? Check. Lying on couch and getting my ears scratched by my mommy? Check. As far as this dog is concerned, the new normal is the same as the old normal. Thank heavens." And this story is headlined, "Programming Salutes Heroes." The 3-day Memorial Day weekend is a great time to catch up on all those TV and streaming shows that you've been meaning to check out. Have you watched Tiger King yet? But there is also some television that actually serves as a reminder of what the holiday is about, honoring and mourning the military personnel who died serving our country. With that in mind, here are a few viewing recommendations. The Pacific War in Color at 2 p.m. Saturday, May 23rd on the Smithsonian Channel This is a re-airing of Smithsonian's ambitious 8-episode series that aims to capture the scale, scope, and savagery of the Pacific campaigns, from the attacks on Pearl Harbor to the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's told via rarely seen color home movies and combat footage. The entire series runs through 11 p.m. Saturday. Sundance Channel goes to war. Over the weekend, the Sundance Channel has scheduled several popular war films, including 2 airings of Steven Spielberg's Oscar-winning World War II saga, Saving Private Ryan, at 4 p.m. Saturday and midnight Sunday, and the 1968 Vietnam set The Green Berets at 8 p.m. Saturday and 4 p.m. Sunday. Also airing MacArthur at 1 p.m. Sunday, Midway 7 p.m. Sunday, and Heartbreak Ridge at 10 p.m. Sunday. The National Memorial Day concert at 7 p.m. Sunday on May 24th on PBS, check your local listings. Joe Mantegna and Gary Sinise host this annual celebration of American heroes. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, the traditional live concert on the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol will not be held. In its place will be pre-taped performances by Cynthia Erivo, Renee Fleming, CeCe Winans, Trace Adkins, Kelly O'Hara, and Christopher Jackson. On the History Channel, Grant will be shown at 8 p.m. Monday. This 3-night, 6-hour miniseries chronicles the life of Ulysses S. Grant, one of the most complex and underappreciated generals and presidents in U.S. history. The production blends dramatized scenes, expert commentary, and archival imagery to tell the story of a humble man who overcame incredible obstacles to rise to the highest ranks of power. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Ron Chernow and Oscar-winning actor Leonardo DiCaprio are among the executive producers. And here is today's flick fact. Jamie Snow, now 55 and serving a life sentence at Stateville Correctional Center because of the death of a Bloomington gas station clerk fatally shot in 1991, is seeking exoneration, claiming Bloomington cops were overzealous in their search for a suspect. An ad related to that case has appeared in this newspaper's classified ads for months. Can you name the Bloomington police officer who testified at Snow's trial and nearly 30 years later, coincidentally, also bunks near Snow? And the answer is, one of the Bloomington police officers first on the 1991 murder scene was Jeffrey Pilo. 18 years after Snow's trial, Pilo himself would be convicted on 35 counts of rape, kidnapping, and stalking women, and sentenced to 440 years in prison, one of the longest sentences in Illinois history. Pilo now lives at Stateville as well. And in the News Digest, the Georgia man who filmed cell phone video of Ahmaud Arbery's fatal shooting was arrested Thursday. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation said 50-year-old William Roddy Bryan was arrested on charges of felony murder and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. No other details were given. And in hurricane season, with forecasters predicting another intense Atlantic hurricane season with as many as 13 to 19 named storms, disaster preparedness experts say it's critically important for people in evacuation zones to plan to stay with friends or family rather than end up in shelters during the coronavirus pandemic. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part 2 of the Pantograph of Friday, May 22, 2020. I look forward to reading again with you soon.